Hello and welcome to the Money Talk podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, why, when GDP is through the floor and recession beckons, have the market's riskiest company bonds just enjoyed their best month for 9 years? That's the question we'll answer today, as well as why cuts to the income you can expect from shares and historic levels for gold are contributing to a particularly confusing picture for investors right now. If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. Junk bonds don't normally like recessions. Junk is the perhaps unkind term used to describe the bonds from companies where the risk of default or failure, in other words, is relatively high. And a big economic downturn, as we are now in, of course, is exactly what causes those defaults. And yet, high-yield bonds, to use a kinder description, have just enjoyed their best monthly total return for 9 years. Elsewhere, gold has been surging and breached $2,000 this week, while those investing for income from shares have been seeing their payments slashed, albeit with some fight back just recently. It's all part of a particularly complicated picture right now for asset classes and how they interact with each other. To explain it more, I'm pleased to say that I'm joined by Tom Stevenson, Investment Director here at Fidelity. Tom, welcome along. This discussion, I think, risks getting a bit complicated, so I'm determined that we explain some of the terms and the issues that we'll be discussing along the way. Let's start with high-yield bonds or junk bonds. What are they and why do they behave differently from other types of bonds?
Yeah, that's a good place to start, actually, Ed. A junk bond or a high-yield bond is a type of corporate bond. So this is a debt that a company takes on. It borrows money from investors, and just like any other bond, it pays out an income to those investors over time, and then at the end of the term of the bond, it repays the capital value of that bond. So why are they called high yield or junk bonds? Well, the clue is in the name. They're high yield because the companies which issue those bonds are relatively risky, they're relatively lowly rated, and therefore investors require a bigger return, a bigger compensation for taking on that risk and investing in the bonds. And that's where we get the sort of, as you say, the rather unkind reference to junk, because, you know, essentially these are lower quality companies issuing the bonds.
And I guess we should say, you know, in contrast to, say, government bonds, the issue with government bonds is that they're issued by a government, which, if it controls its own currency, can't quite go bust. So there's a great level of security. Clearly, these are by companies which can. And so they tend, you'll often hear it described as them behaving more similarly to equities and shares in companies rather than government bonds.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And it's probably worth making a further distinction, actually, between different types of corporate bonds, because there's a spectrum here. You know, there are at one end, there are very safe companies which are extremely unlikely to go bust. So they behave a bit more like a government bond, and they are rated more highly by the rating agencies. So they'll be given, you know, for example, a AA or a AAA rating. You then get, as I say, riskier companies, maybe smaller companies or companies operating in less certain environments. Energy companies, for example, there are a lot of junk bonds in the oil business, for example, and these are more likely to suffer problems, to go bust. And as you say, because of that, they can behave a bit more like shares than bonds.
Yeah, and let's put this in the context of market conditions right now. We said there the risk from high yield bonds is that companies go bust and they can't pay their bondholders back. Now, normally, investors would see a greater risk of that happening in a recession for all the reasons that you might imagine. Firms go bust when there's a downturn. But that hasn't happened, or at least it hasn't happened in quite the same way this time and in this recession as in previous recessions.
No, that's right. And there are a few things going on at the moment in the bond. The bond market is in a slightly unusual position during this pandemic. And it's related to the actions of central banks. So central banks, really since the financial crisis, have moved to support economies by injecting money into the economy. And one of the ways that they do that is that they print money and they buy bonds. Now, they've tended to buy rather safe bonds, government bonds in particular. What they've done this time around is they've extended the reach of their support measures to include corporate bonds. And this has had the effect of underpinning the value of those bonds. And this is really the first time this has happened. And so we have a situation now where investors who are looking for an income are looking at the relative value of apparently on offer from these bonds and saying, do you know what? The high yield that I would have demanded before to compensate me for the risk of investing in that, I don't think I need quite such a high yield anymore because I think that the central bank has got my back here. So I'm prepared to accept a slightly lower yield for that. And as we know, yields and prices move in opposite directions with bonds. So a falling yield has had the consequence of pushing prices higher. And that's why, as you said at the outset, bonds have had such a very good month.
Yeah, and that was in July that we're talking about. I think they entered the month, I was reading, I think the average yield on US junk bonds was somewhere between 6% and 7%. So, you know, nice healthy return, particularly from a bond, as we said, more like an equity type return there. Yeah. But as more people have said, yep, I'll have some of that, they've bought those through the month of July, and the yields have come down, and they're now somewhere around between 4% and 5% on that comparison. So you can see that yield fall and that price rise. Mm. Now, as well as being more confident that the defaults won't happen because of that central bank action that you described there, Tom, investors, I guess, are also seeing a greater attraction from high yields in terms of income, right? And the paucity of income from other sources is also part of this picture, isn't it?
Absolutely right. I mean, it's a relative thing. You know, you're comparing different asset classes for what they can offer you. And in terms of income, junk bonds, high yield bonds, offer a much better income than is available from other sources. So, for example, the top end of the corporate bond market has seen a lot of investment interest in recent years because of the shortage of income available from even safer government bonds or deposit accounts, for example. So that has pushed the yields on high quality corporate debt down further. As we know, government bond yields are very low at the moment. Interest rates are very low, so you can't get much of an income from a deposit account, so it doesn't leave many places to get a high yield. I mean, we've talked in the past about commercial property. That's been one source of income, and it continues to be a source of income. But of course, there are all sorts of risks involved there. We've seen, you know, with the retail sector and the office sector particularly. So high yield bonds really are, you know, a very rare source of income at the moment. So it's perhaps not surprising that we've seen this downward pressure on yields as people have been buying them.
Yeah, and this is all part of a picture, as I say, that's really complicated, and it tells a story about how asset classes never operate in a vacuum, do they? They're always reacting to what other asset classes are doing. Now, I mentioned at the start that gold has been having a pretty good pandemic so far. Another little rise in prices this week. The price per ounce rose above $2,000. Now, in some ways, that's not surprising because gold is a haven asset. We've discussed that many times in the past. And given the turmoil we've had, people are going to fly to gold. But the way income producing assets have been behaving has also helped gold, right? And how investors see gold.
Yes, I mean, it actually follows on, very neatly from the conversation we've just had about bond yields, because one of the significant features of gold as an investment, you rightly say that it's perceived to be a safe haven. It's a hedge against inflation. It's perceived to be a protection against inflation. It's perceived to be a protection against uncertainty, general economic uncertainty. But the price that you pay for that is that gold doesn't give you any income. There's no yield from gold. There's no dividend from gold or interest from gold. So as a consequence, if interest rates otherwise are high, then there's quite a heavy opportunity cost in holding gold. You're giving up a reasonably strong income elsewhere by holding your gold. Now, that's not the case when income generally falls, when bond yields fall, when deposit account rates fall. In that situation, then gold looks relatively attractive, and that's what we've seen recently. So that's the income part of the equation. There are other reasons, of course, why gold has been rising recently, and also not unrelated actually to what we've just been discussing. Mm. Part of the issue is the value of the dollar, for example. The dollar is the currency in which gold is priced. So if the dollar falls, which it has been recently. Then for a buyer of gold in another currency, say someone with pounds or yen or euros, they can buy more gold for every unit of their currency than they could if the dollar was stronger. So the falling dollar has been another factor in the rise of the gold price recently.
Yes, yeah, so these are all different sides of the same story, and as you say, it all relates in one way or another to income, isn't it? And you know, people will always want income from their investments, and the sort of final arm of this, I guess, is the equity market and the stock market. Let's have a word about equity income, shares, and dividends, Tom. We know that dividends have been hammered in the pandemic, but what's the latest on income from shares? Because there may be a bit of a fight back as regards dividends.
Yes, there is early evidence that the really bad news on dividends that we were talking about a few weeks ago, a few months ago now, actually in the spring, is beginning to ease. So back in the early stages of the pandemic, a number of companies were either in a situation where they were forced to cut their dividend. This was most notably the case with the banks, where banks were essentially told by their regulator not to pay a dividend, or companies have chosen not to pay a dividend because, quite sensibly, they've decided that they needed to conserve their cash during a very uncertain environment in order to protect the future of the company. So what we saw through the first half of 2020 was many companies either cutting their dividends or scrapping them altogether. What we've seen more recently is just a few companies beginning to cut, to rejoin the dividend list. BAE Systems was last week became one of the latest FTSE 100 company to say that it was going to be paying a dividend again. That one worth about £300 million, so pretty significant. Smurfit Kappa packaging company, so that's another one that's rejoined the list, and Land Securities property company, that was another one. So we're beginning to see a little bit of this. But we need to put this in context. You know, over the first half of the year, something like more than £30 billion was wiped off the value of dividends paid out to shareholders. And just this week, one of the country's biggest dividend payers, BP, announced that it would be halving its dividend, halved its quarterly dividend to 5.25p a share. This scarcity of income is not an issue that's gone away. It's still there, but it's more of a mixed picture than it was maybe 3 months ago.
Yeah, and I guess this all brings us back to an old point, but one which always bears repetition from an investor's point of view, which is always to be diversified. I mean, we've discussing several different asset classes there, and they're moving in different directions. Some are correlated, some are uncorrelated. That can change over time. You can never quite know how different assets are gonna react in any given circumstances, and it's only by holding, you know, a correct spread, whatever that means to you, that you're going to reduce the risk of big losses in any one part of the market. And it's a good time to remember that.
It absolutely is, and I think that, you know, what's happened with gold is an absolutely sort of classic example of this. One of the ways that we recommend that investors gain exposure to a rising gold price is through the shares of gold mining stocks. And there's a fund on our Select 50 list of our favorite funds. It's called the 91 Global Gold Fund. That 91 is they used to be called Investec. If it doesn't sound familiar, that's why. 91 Global Gold Fund is a fund of gold miners on the Select 50. And it's performed extremely well. I mean, it's outperformed even the rising gold price, which is what you would expect, because a gold miner has relatively fixed costs. And as the gold price rises, then its profits will rise disproportionately more strongly. So, you know, if you've had a mixed portfolio, I've had a balanced portfolio with some equities, some bonds, some commodities like gold, then you probably had a smoother ride over the pandemic than if you'd just been in one of those asset classes.
Yeah, and you've reminded me, I'll mention here in terms of bonds and high yield bonds, getting exposure to that part of the market, you need to... hold bond funds. Let's assume that people are going to invest that way. Bond funds which actually give you exposure, and strategic bond funds, as they are often described, will do that. They'll invest right across the waterfront of the bond market. Other funds, of course, will specify in government bonds or in high yield specifically. But if you want a slightly sort of easier way to do it, where a fund manager will pick those parts of the market, a strategic bond fund is the way to go, right?
I think that's right. You know, that's always been our recommendation in this part of the market. You know, investing in bonds is a bit complicated. I mean, I hope we've managed to, you know, talk about it at a reasonably simple level in this conversation. But it is difficult, and for the ordinary investor who is not an expert in the mechanics of how the bond market works, then getting a professional to do it for you does make sense. And it's the advantage of a strategic bond fund, as you say, is that the fund manager can move along the spectrum of bonds from safe government bonds all the way up to those riskier high yield junk bonds that we've been talking about, as they see the opportunities. And so it seems that for most of us, that's a very sensible way of going about it.
Okay, well, Tom, that is all that we have time for now. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Ed.
You've been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week. Please be aware that the value of investments and the income you get from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information doesn't constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Eligibility to invest in an ISA or a pension and the value of tax savings depends on personal circumstances, and all tax rules may change. You will not normally be able to access money held in a pension until the age of 55. Reference to specific securities or funds should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities or funds, and is included for the purpose of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you're unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor.